The Wintrust Business Lunch. Wednesdays, we visit with Terry Savage, the nationally syndicated financial columnist and author. You can read her stuff at terrysavage.com. What do you make of that? Plus 500 on the Dow.
Yeah, it's about time. I mean, really, seriously, we're at 29,650-ish right now.
Yeah.
You know, I think our high was significantly higher.
Well, in June. 39.
Yeah. And, I mean, we're down a third, but there are awful lot of stocks, the best known names, that are down 60 and 70%. I don't try and time markets, but for days like this, I pull out of my joker deck. You know, remember I told you to keep investing through the market. And on the days when it's down, I always come back on and say, remember, I told you to keep some chicken money on the sideline and now you're getting paid more. And truthfully, that is the balance. And there are some days when you think, oh, I have just the right amount of stocks and the right amount of chicken money, and it's starting to pay off. And those are days when I walk in with a big smile. But there are plenty of days where I think, ugh, why didn't I sell more and have more chicken money? But I think you have to make a plan and stick to it.
Do you think a day where the Dow moves 500 means anything, or can that just be the vagaries of where we are?
Yeah,
right,
no,
now?
I think it means the opposite side of the day the market was down 1,300.
Yeah,
I mean,
right.
This is people, you know, the professionals searching for bargains, searching for. So I could give you a very technical thing of what this might be pinned on. Great Britain got so scared as the pound fell and everything costs more, and interest rates started soaring there because of the perceived inflationary effect of their tax cuts, which remains to be seen. So Great Britain went into the bond market, actually, and bought bonds. You know, our Fed bought a lot of Treasury, our U.S. government IOUs, to put money into the economy in 2020 and 2021 to keep us from going down the drain. So what do? The government sells IOUs because it has a lot of debt. This is U.S., but it'll apply in a minute to Britain. The government sells a lot of IOUs. The Federal Reserve buys them and pays for them from these big dealers with newly created money. Nobody, I used to say Paul Volcker, nobody ever asked him to put his driver's license number on the back of the check. It's just new money. Right now, our Fed is not only raising interest rates to slow the economy, but it is selling off some of its huge $9+ trillion bond portfolio. And when the banks pay for the bonds that it is selling, and these are big institutions that buy the bonds, they want them in their portfolio. They think, well, you know, 4% for 2 years is pretty good, or these mortgage securities, the rates are up. When the Fed sells them, they get the money in and then they flush it down the toilet. And that takes liquidity, literally sucks liquidity out of the economy. So that's what's going on in America. Fed's raising rates and sucking money out. In Britain, their central bank decided to go into the market, contrary to what their fiscal policy was, about cutting taxes. They said, oh, no, we can't have this. Our currency is going down the tubes. We will buy bonds and put liquidity into the economy to keep it from going into recession. So there's a sense that they're doing the opposite of the Fed.
You could just say this at dinner. But that's inflationary, right?
Well, I was just about to say, you could say this at the dinner table. The Fed's being tight and fighting inflation. The central bank in Britain got scared and started creating liquidity. And so the world is all disjointed. And now there are some people hoping that Jay Powell will go, gee, maybe Britain's right. The Brits are right, you know, and we should stop sending money into the economy, taking money out of the economy. I don't think that's going to happen. But if you talk to traders, they like to have a reason for everything. And it's because the Brits blinked. But Jay Powell isn't.
There's a story in the Washington Post, 7 ways a recession could be good for you financially.
Yeah.
I'm going to frustrate you, annoy you. I'm going to annoy you with some of these in just a minute.
Okay.
You may have a question for Terry, too, but don't be annoying. 312, that's my job. 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. You can call or text. Terry is here to answer your questions and give us the big picture as well. Terry Savage is here, and your phone calls are too. Terry, before we go to the phones on the Wintrust Business Lunch, anything else you want to pass along?
I'm just looking at a headline that's just coming across. IRS erred on child tax credit payments for millions of eligible families. However, the aid was 98% overall accurate, according to this report. They skipped paying those advanced child tax credits, it's the $300 or $250 a month last summer, and monthly for 4.1 million eligible households.
That's
but
a
they
lot.
Sent payments in error to 1.5 million filers who didn't qualify. This is the IRS that gets after you if you make a, you know, two-penny math error. Okay.
Well, the error was on your favor, though. Some people were getting payments that didn't.
Some people didn't get the ones they deserve, but they can apply. They can file for those. If they didn't get the child tax credit, they'll have a chance when they file their tax return next year. But 1.5 million filers who didn't qualify got those payments.
So now the question is, do they claw it back, or what do you do about that?
I don't think.
Stay tuned.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk to Kelly real quick here. Kelly, let's start with you. You're on WGN. How can we help?
Hi there. I have a Parent Plus loan. I called the company to ask if I could get my money back from March 20th, 2020. And she said, yes, I need to do that before the government, you know, wipes out the loans. My brother's company's loan company said to wait until the government roll out the loans to get your request your money back that you've already paid in. What should I do?
I have not heard. I'll call Ray, but I have not heard that if you've already paid on the loans, that you're going to get a refund.
You can.
I haven't heard that.
During forbearance, you can get the money you paid back. And if you qualify then for forgiveness,
You talk to Ray all the time. That's why I've said that's not something I had heard. So I would suggest that you ask for it back immediately while forbearance is still in effect. I did not know that you could actually ask for payments back that you made, principal payments that you made.
Far be it for me to be the answer grape here because I'm not.
I've talked to Ray many times. Yeah.
And her question is.
My first thing was I would have called her.
But should you wait before or after the forbearance ends?
No, I would ask. Oh, no. You want to
do
move
it now.
On that immediately.
I think
for
so.
Sure.
But I'll give you a phone number to call, Kelly. And this is for the Kaplan Law Firm. Now, let me see if I can remember correctly. 312-294-8989. 312-294-8989. Ray Kaplan is a frequent guest here, and she is the state's premier student loan expert. She will know the answer to that.
Thank you so much, both of you. Have a great day.
Sure.
Yeah, you too. Good luck.
Wait. Are you still there, Kelly?
Nope, she's not, but tell us what you know.
So I Googled it. That's how I know a lot of stuff. If you made federal student loan payments during the pandemic before learning you were eligible for debt forgiveness, you should be able to request a refund through your loan servicer. About 1 in 5 federal student loan borrowers did seize that opportunity to reduce their loan balances, but then everything came up. I found the answer on the federal student aid website.
That's pretty good.
You can get a refund for any payment, including the auto debit payments you make during the payment pause that began on March 13th, 2020. Contact your loan servicer to request that your payment be refunded. Now, I will predict.
They don't mention the timeline.
They don't mention the timeline. I will predict this is going to be one giant spaghetti bowl of a hassle, but I would start the process immediately.
Okay, let's pick up another phone line. Let's talk to Marge. You're on WGN. Marge, you're on the air. How can we help you?
Yeah, hi. I have a question about Series E bonds. I've had a few come due after 30 years this year, and my local bank where I have a trust will not redeem them for me. They said I have to go through the government, and they tell me to go online and go on government.com and things. I still don't know where I send or how I get the papers to redeem those Series E bonds when they're in a trust.
Okay. That doesn't matter. Are they in your revocable living trust with your name and Social Security, your trust name and Social Security? Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You need to go to treasurydirect.gov, click on individual, then click on Series E bonds. And they will show you how to send them in along with a signature guarantee.
She's got paper documents, but these are paper bonds.
Yes, I know, because
how can you not do that online or go to your bank and have them?
Log in to, I'm reading the instructions right off Treasury. I know right where to go. Log in to Treasury Direct and follow the directions there. If you hold an account at a local bank and it does cash savings bonds, ask if they'll cash yours. That may depend on how long you've had an account there. If the bank will cash them for you, find out what their dollar limit is. Or B, send them to Treasury Retail Services along with FS Form 1522, and you can download it right there. You don't need to sign the bonds, but you'll have to validate your identity, And that FS Form 1522 tells you how. See the certification section of the form, and the form also gives you the address.
You do not have to send the bonds in, though.
You do have to send the bonds
in. I thought you just said you
don't have to. But you don't have to sign them.
So sign them. Okay.
And you will send them by certified mail to that address.
I know that sounds like a lot of information, Marge, but good luck to you on that.
TreasuryDirect.gov, individual Series E bonds, and then just search, we'll scroll down to how do I cash my EE and E bonds.
If Marge or anybody else says, now, wait a minute, what did you guys just say? Remember, we always podcast these conversations. You can listen to them again at the leisure of your own home and maybe take notes as you go. Just go to WGNradio.com, click on the Wintrust Business Lunch after the show, and this conversation will live there as well. And lots of phone calls and text messages for you. Many of them continue to ask questions like this, Terry Savage. Good afternoon. Wondered what you think about two-year broker bank two-year CDs at 4.2% and a Fidelity IRA versus two-year treasuries. Age 69, have other money still invested. This is from a broker money market. I don't know what I just said.
Yeah, well, what I've been talking about was talking about last week is that most CDs, unless you really hunt around, are paying like 1.5%, 1.75%. Last week, I went had this great epiphany that six-month treasury bills at the Treasury Direct auction would be yielding about between 3.9 and 4%. Turned out they, at the Monday auction, yield 3.98%. And I reminded you that if you opened an account at Treasury Direct to buy savings bonds, and you can still do this, you can go right to treasurydirect.gov, click on your, enter, log into your account, click on buy, and you can buy 26-week Treasury bills. You don't know exactly the rate you're going to get. It turned out to be close to 4%. Those Treasury bills are trading now back where we were talking about last week, but there was a big surge in interest rates last week. Now, as to this, you could buy, they had a two-year treasury note auction yesterday, that also around 4%. So if you want to go through your brokerage account and get brokered CDs and you want to leave your money in the brokerage account, you can do that. You can hunt around and get higher rates. But I'm just saying for the majority of people who have like only $100, those brokered CDs usually require a higher limit. But you can buy treasury bills direct from the government, the safest thing in the world, at next Monday's auction, and they'll still probably be close to 4% for 6 months, and the minimum is $100.
And that's guaranteed?
It's federally guaranteed, and you don't pay state income taxes on the interest. And I can't tell you right now because it's a trading market, but it looks to me like six-month T-bills will still be above 3.9%, I would guess.
This texter says, is the I-bond still the best place? Because we were singing those songs.
So if you're, you have your TreasuryDirect.gov account, by the way, at TerrySavage.com on the homepage under Financial Links, there's one that says Savings Bonds, Series I Bonds, 9.62%. Click here. That'll get you the link to open your account. There's a column. The top column still says T-bills beat CDs. That'll have you the links. The Series I bond is sort of a five-year commitment. Otherwise, you lose 3 months' interest if you cash them in soon, and you must keep them for a year. But if you buy them now before the rate changes November 1st, which will still probably be a very good rate, you'll get the full 6 months of 9.62% interest on Series I bonds. And then after that expires, you'll get the rate that is now going to be set on November 1st, which will be pretty good. 2 or 3 years down the road, if rates come down and the Fed wins and the economy slows down, the rates might be lower. But right now, 9.62% is spectacular. You can only, I say only, there are a lot of people that would like to put a lot more money in. You can only buy $10,000 worth of them in any 1 year. You can buy $10,000 again in January. And but you can buy them, again, as little as $100.
John has a question for Terry Savage on line three. You're on WGN. Hi, John.
Hello, everybody. Hi, Terry. Thank you for taking my call. I'm going to try to explain this, hopefully. I have a Parent PLUS loan for my son's education. And then he has his own, I think it's the subsidized student loan as well. And I have an existing loan for my education as well.
Ooh.
Well, all three of those loans qualify for the $10,000 loan.
Well, first of all, you have to have income of under $125,000 on a single return or $250,000 on a joint return. That's what it would take to qualify. And that's a fantastically interesting question. His would. Yours would. And I'm guessing you might get away with getting a $10,000 forgiveness on the Parent PLUS loan because they're in different categories. And I hope you will try. And John, I'll remember your name, and I hope you will call in. And they are putting up that website like any minute. First week in October will be the place where you will apply for student loan forgiveness, which will be made through your loan servicer statements. They're not sending you money. They're just going to adjust your balance on the student loans. So you will have to apply for all three of those. There's some talk that the loan servicer should do it automatically, but then they'd have to verify your income. So when that website goes up, we will make a very big deal out of it. I want you to try and apply on all three counts, and then let's just see what happens.
Thank you very much. I really appreciate
sure.
that.
Good luck to you. And it was a recommendation of Terry's, or maybe it was that Ray Kaplan we talked about earlier, that you do go to your loan servicer. You make sure you know how to access your account or create an account if you don't have one so that they can automatically get your information. If anything's going to happen automatically in terms of forgiveness, you want to do that now.
Exactly. You can if you can go to studentaid.gov. And log in because you have a student aid number.
That's what I did.
And find your loan servicer, and those change because Navient got out of it, and there are a couple of new servicers. Make sure they have your correct address, you know how to log into your account there, and update everything so that there will be snafus. That's another spaghetti ball.
I was just going to say there's so many spaghetti balls out there right
yes.
now, but if you invest a little time, that's $10,000 of savings right there. Okay, Terry, we're out of time.
Oh, no.
TerrySavage.com is the website to find her information. TerrySavage.com. She'll join us again next Wednesday. More business news with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. The number of workers who've returned to the office in Chicago is up, but still trails the nation. The data comes from security swipes into office buildings compiled by real estate technology firm Castle Systems. The report in Crane shows the weekly average of swipes is at 45.2% compared to 47.3% nationally. The number of people back at the office is still about half of pre-pandemic levels. Houston is at 56.7%, New York is at 46.1%, Los Angeles is at 45.1%. Berwyn-based Bona Beef has announced plans for a franchise expansion nationwide. The family-owned company plans to open 100 franchise stores over the next 5 years in Florida, Texas, Colorado, Tennessee, Arizona, and elsewhere in the Midwest. Expansion states were chosen based on high growth markets and or the amount of Chicago transplants in those locations. Bona Beef opened in Berwyn in 1981, and the company currently has 25 locations in the Chicago area and Northwest Indiana. The expansion comes as Italian beef popularity is high, thanks to the FX drama The Bear about a family-owned beef stand in Chicago. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
The business of food.
We're going to talk apples again today, but first, we are sponsored by the Chevy Silverado HD. Experience life in HD. Visit ChevyDriveChicago.com.
I love my apples. I love them baked in a pie.
There are apples galore coming off the trees across the area. Jim Fizell went apple picking in Wisconsin. John Williams plucked a few in Michigan. And that's where Abby Schilling runs the fruit farm her grandparents started.
My grandfather, Ed, and my grandmother, Clara, started the farm in the 1930s.
And she bought the farm in 2017 from her dad, Mick Klug, a name you're familiar with if you go to farmers markets around Chicago.
We do five throughout the city on four different days, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays.
And although the name looks like Klug, it's Klug. They even added an umlaut a while back to help us get it right.
We still get Klug quite often, but that's okay.
Anyway, back to the apples. This weekend, her farm, umlaut and all, will be featured at the Lincoln Square Ravenswood Apple Fest.
Yeah, sure. We try to bring to Apple Fest three tart apple varieties, three sweet apple varieties, Honeycrisp, of course, which is a fan favorite, 7 to 9 varieties typically, and then lots and lots of apple cider.
It's the 35th year for the Lincoln Square Apple Fest, which is on Lincoln Avenue between Lawrence and Wilson. It's from 9 till 6, Saturday and Sunday.
It's a great one. It's a great Chicago street festival. Great for our business. I think great for the community. Kid friendly.
But back to the Klug Farm, which is where in southwest Michigan?
Just outside of Stevensville.
Where they grow a lot more than apples. Dozens of fruits and veggies. And what is it, Abby, about that area along the lake that makes it so good for growing?
Our proximity to Lake Michigan keeps winter temperatures reasonable. The trees are able to survive a Michigan winter. It's also very fertile soil.
You can say hi to Abby and the McKlug crew Saturday and Sunday at the Lincoln Square Ravenswood Apple Fest, 9 till 6, between Lawrence and Wilson. From the farm to your belly, today is National Drink a Beer Day. That's the business of food on 720 WGN.
I love my apples every day.
Speaking of really slick things, everybody's all about electric vehicles these days. The Chicago Automobile Trade Association, starting tomorrow through this weekend at Oakbrook Terrace, is going to have an event to better educate people about, it looks like, EVs. Jennifer Morand joins us now to talk a little bit about that. Hi, Jennifer. This is John Williams. How are you?
Hi, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Jennifer's the president of the Chicago Auto Trade Association and the general manager of the auto show. What's going on out there at Oakbrook Terrace?
So the widespread availability of EVs is growing. I'm sure you are aware, as many people are, and charging infrastructure is maturing, and government incentives make EVs more affordable than ever before. So we're excited to present Chicago Drives Electric to consumers, and it's a pre-registered event where people can get in the brand new vehicles, the latest EVs, hybrids, and plug-in hybrids to really learn about what's out there and then, you know, in terms of technology and so forth, because, you know, they're coming faster than ever.
But I could go to a Ford or Tesla dealer and take a test drive. Are they all going to be there? Can I kind of pick and choose?
Yeah, so that's a really good point. With inventory levels as low as they are, it is very difficult to go to your dealership and actually be able to drive some of these vehicles. So we're actually gathering a bunch of manufacturers together, including Alfa Romeo, Chevy, Chrysler, Jeep, Kia, Ford, Volvo, Volkswagen. All of those manufacturers are going to have their latest vehicles out here for people to test drive back to back. And I did mention that this was a pre-registered event. Believe it or not, overnight, all of the time slots completely booked up. But that said, if people want to visit ChicagoAutoShow.com, they can get on a wait list. We do have a wait list going in case some slots open up. But the good news is that we plan to bring Chicago Drives Electric and all of these vehicles as well to the Chicago Auto Show this coming February. So if you didn't get on that initial list, no worries. There is still time to, you know, visit the auto show this February as well.
I guess one takeaway is people are very interested but have a lot of questions, huh?
Exactly. And that's what's great about this event. There's going to be product specialists out here from each of the brands to answer questions about the vehicles, you know, address range anxiety and what people need to know if they are considering purchasing an EV, you know, like at home charging. What is the infrastructure like if I'm on the road? Am I going to have enough charge to get from point A to point B? All of that factors into your, you know, individual needs and lifestyle. So the good news is that they'll be able to kind of break this down for them. And then similarly at the auto show, we're going to expand our indoor EV track, which we actually debuted last year in February. We're going to triple the size of it, include more brands on that track, and then build around it a hub, an experience for people to learn and educate themselves. Because, you know, as we were talking about, there's just lots of education that needs to happen still because these EVs are coming quick.
Jennifer Morand's the president of the Chicago Auto Trade Association. I could be in a waiting list, but I'm probably not going to get behind the wheel of these vehicles at your event at Oakbrook Terrace. But could I still go and learn, you know, get questions answered?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, note that the vehicles will be kind of, you know, in motion. They'll probably be out on the road since they are back to back. But, you know, you can certainly swing by. But I'd recommend going to ChicagoAutoShow.com, getting on the wait list. And, you know, that way you'll also get notified immediately about any updates that are coming to the Chicago Auto Show, especially around the EV space.
Boy, good for you. You guys saw this coming. It sounds like what a great idea. In fact, I would recommend you have this event every weekend because you can sell it out.
We were amazed, and actually it is a free event, and so really the idea is just to educate people because, like, you know, like you said, and they really can't get behind these vehicles if they go to their dealer with the inventory levels as low as they have been. But yeah, we were overwhelmed by the response that we got. We had in no way thought that we'd book up overnight, but that was what happened. And we have people driving in from, you know, various states outside of Illinois as well. Wow. So it's hugely popular.
Well, congratulations. Good idea. Jennifer Moran, president of the trade associations and also the manager of the auto show. You'll get a chance to do more of this then in February. You can go online and get on that wait list. Okay. Good to know, Jennifer. Thanks for your help today.
Thanks so much.